Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. And folks, you know, we're actually out of documents, so to speak, to actually go through. I mean, and looking back, Paul, we've got Paul, and I appreciate you coming back to kind of talk about, you know, everything that we've already talked about and what has to happen, because we're just around the corner from legislative sessions where our legislators are going to be duped. And I really mean this. They're going to be duped by, well, there's the best way to say this, is by two organizations that are going to come in and present an argument that has nothing to do with the solution. And this is the conventionites and the anti-conventionites. And so the anti-conventionites is the John Birch Society and I think parts of the Eagle Forum, parts of them, because some actually, you know, well, a lot of people, and this is what really kills me, because I've ran into people that are aligned with, you know, these two primary organizations. And a really good example of somebody that speaks, they're not actually a member, but they are able to ride through the John Birch Society speaking circuits. And so they're beholden to the John Birch Society, and they literally tout the corporate line. And as I've gone through this, and I've said this before, that we really need to have an open and honest dialogue to actually discuss, you know, where are we, what are we going to do, and what has to happen. Because before we even have a conversation, before we have a conversation on the solution, let's make sure we all agree what the problem is.
Right.
Right? I mean,
that makes sense.
Right. And it's almost like two lobbyist organizations, the anti-conventionites, which is the John Birchers and so forth. And we also, because there's other groups that are against that. Even some parties are just against it. But the problem is the parties have actually been co-opted into thinking it's a binary conversation. Either we convene a convention or we don't. Those are the only things we can do. And I'll tell you why the party's involved in this, because the party actually is playing on this same field. And I'll explain this when we really look at where the different options are and who's involved in them. Then you go, oh, now I see why the party's on that side, because it maintains this ambiguity that they exploit. So anyway, so we actually have to have this real conversation about the problem. And so the conversation must really identify what the problem really is. So bottom line, because if the problem is the Constitution, then it really is a conversation between the conventionites and the anti-conventionites. Because if the Constitution has faults, if the Constitution is really causing all of our problems, then I'm on the side of the conventionites, if it really is the problem. Now, the sovereign citizens claim it is. The sovereign citizens, but, you know, why aren't they involved in the convention? Well, because sovereign citizens can't even have a say. If they're involved in that and they're actually supporting that, it's almost like we've got foreigners, you know, getting involved in lobbying and what have you, and they should have no say. They've chosen their path. They don't want to be involved in this government. So why are they involved in these other things that are affecting our government? They shouldn't. I mean, you know, it's kind of like you made a choice. There are consequences that come with that decision. So just shut up and live with the consequences. Right? It's the same thing as sexual perversions. You go down this path of saying, I'm going to, you know, be this whatever. And there are consequences with that. You may not be able to have kids. Just shut up and live with your consequences. Quit trying to backdoor and exploit opportunities when, you know, you have to be an adult, right? I mean, you have to acknowledge the fact that what you're doing is causing these things. Like, you're living a riotous life and you're drinking yourself. You're destroying your liver. Okay, so why would you come and say, I need health care so that I can have my liver replaced? It is insane. We're in the business of removing the consequences of sin. But let me get back to the problem. Okay. I believe that everybody believes that the Constitution is really not the problem. Okay. And I believe even the conventionites, which is why those people who are a part of the convention are the convention of states. And there's a few different groups calling for a convention, and they all think that, oh, well, this one amendment will solve the problem, like term limits. I think that there's a term limit group that has actually kind of severed themselves from the convention of states and said, we believe term limits will absolutely solve our problem. It doesn't. It doesn't mm-hmm. change Congress's usurpation of power and spending money on other things. All it does is it changes the tenure of how long a person can stay in office. That's it. And it doesn't enforce the Constitution. So,
go ahead. We've got term limits in Missouri, and I think it adds new problems.
Yes, I agree. They have term limits in South Dakota as well. And it makes it so that your government can't really get engaged. That these people that actually, when they start finally realizing that, oh, this is what we need to do, they're termed out.
Well, they're termed out. And the people with experience, guess who they are? They're the lobbyists.
Yes.
Oh, man.
And they get to exploit that. So anyway, so if I'm correct, and most everybody, because the impetus for the convention is this is how we're going to deal with government overreach. Well, not so fast. I don't believe that that's the proper way. And the anti-conventionites are saying, well, no, we don't want a convention. We need to nullify. We just did a very long episode over nullification. So, folks, just go listen to the last few shows. We prove that Madison and Jefferson, because many of the people that are in these ranks are going out and telling you that Madison and Jefferson support nullification. And we have just proven that they don't. We've proven to you that they do not support nullification as a process of getting government into compliance. That the process is interposition, which is how it leads to, it requires the states to interpose that leads to nullifying. I mean, the final term is that these things are disbanded, demolished, and basically removed from government's apparatus. But anyway, when we started going through the Constitution, we absolutely started identifying all of the problems, not with the Constitution, but with the federal government directly violating, which is why, folks, we have a color-coded Constitution. And so on this presentation, and actually, folks, I want to make this presentation available to you so that you can use this in going in and identifying the problem. And so the best way to define the problem regarding the Constitution proves, you know, with this graphic, I mean, you've seen the graphic, right, Paul? You got it up?
Oh, I've got it up.
Right. Yeah. And I think those 10 pages with all the colors of all the different violations that the Constitution is being subjected to by the federal government speaks loudly, right?
But yes.
Okay.
Absolutely.
I mean, this is a good graphic to just say, here are all the violations to the U.S. Constitution. These 10 pages is basically Article 1 to Article 7. And so, because Article 7 is at the very bottom. And so when we actually look, these are direct violations of the Constitution. If anybody wants to argue that these aren't violations, then let's open that door. But if not, and if we can all accept that the fact is that the Constitution is being directly violated by the federal government in all these different ways, and I don't have any markings here where I have found a problem with the Constitution other than the 16th and 17th Amendments. Mm-hmm. And as a matter of fact, I think if you really look, you'll find the pink coloring will actually help identify how the Constitution is being violated by these amendments. Okay, so, and that's the 16th Amendment and the 17th Amendment that is violating the Constitution. So anyway, so clearly the Constitution is not the problem. So what I've just proven is that there's no need to amend the Constitution. Why? Because when we really look at what language is in the Constitution, and they say, oh, well, they're doing things that they shouldn't do. Well, we have an amendment called the 10th Amendment. And what does that say, Paul? You don't have to read a paraphrase. The 10th Amendment is?
That anything that's not in the Constitution is reserved to the states and the people.
There you go. In other words, those things not delegated to the federal government, nor prevented in the Constitution to the states, are reserved to the states. Absolutely. Okay. So, in other words, what they're saying is, well, we need something because the 10th Amendment doesn't say it, but it does.
Right. So it says it clearly.
Yeah. So what more amendment do they need? It's right there in the 10th Amendment. So their whole argument is just literally wiped out now. There is no need for a convention because the Constitution is not the problem. And it clearly states powers not delegated or reserved to the states. So we've got the Constitution is not the problem, but we have another. The problem is not just these direct violations, which is why we have this next page. And the next page actually identifies usurped powers. And it starts with the Department of Interior, which they called the Department of Home in 1849. And it ends up with and these are the seals of all of these unconstitutional powers going to the Department of Homeland Security. Mm-hmm. And so when we look at the Department of Homeland Security, we already know that the Constitution and its execution of the laws is delegated to whom? It's right there in Article 1, Section 8. Who has the authority?
It's delegated to Congress.
Who has the authority to execute the laws? I mean, Congress has to call forth them. What's that?
Yeah. Well, the president has the authority to execute the laws.
He has the responsibility to faithfully execute the laws, but only one institution has the authority to actually go and execute them, and they have to be called forth.
Militia.
There you go, the militia. So the fact that we have Homeland Security and all of these enforcement agencies is actually bypassing the call for the militia to execute the laws of the union. We're supposed to have a self-governing system, folks. And the reason why we have all the tyranny that we have is because the government has ignored what they're supposed to do. And most people say, yeah, well, that's okay. You just keep charging us more money. Yeah, that's all right. No, it's not. You know, I have to point out that our forefathers rebelled against taxation without representation. Mm-hmm. And that taxation was 0.1%, 0.1 penny.
Right.
Folks, what the heck happened? We're paying 20%. I mean, anybody that's in a decent income that's, you know, surviving, they're in the 20s.
Right.
How is that even an adequate government? Especially because we're providing for ourselves when you're in that tax bracket. You're not dependent and you're actually paying. So bottom line, we've shown you that there are 11 executive powers that have been usurped. That's including housing and urban development. That's including health and human services. That's including the Department of Transportation. And we've already gone through all that. So this slide is actually showing you the powers that have been usurped and where they're spending an ungodly amount of money on powers not delegated. You know, all these people that run around that tell you that the war is a racket, the federal government is using war as a system to drain us. No, actually, our revenue that we make off of imposts is probably easily covers our war costs or our defense and our defense needs. In other words, the money that we're taking debt on and being taxed directly in our income tax is paying for these organizations. Health and Human Services is more expensive than our health, or I should say than our defense. It's that bad. But that's only this is still not everything. This is the tip of the iceberg when it really comes to the tyranny that we're facing. So we're still trying to identify what the problem is, the violations of the Constitution, the usurped powers, and then there's this other real problem, because we have laws coming to us from an institution that has no authority to actually give us laws. And that institution is the judiciary. And we hear right now, whenever they're appointing a Supreme Court justice, you know, the Supreme Court can create laws, right? And yep. That was actually lobbied out there. And I'm going, are you kidding me? They have no legislative power. Congress is very clear. That's the first egregious violation that only Congress can create laws. Go ahead.
Well, the Constitution is very clear. But answer a question for me. What is it about Congress that they are not jealously guarding their authority, their exclusive authority to create laws?
Well, so they've created this collusive, if you want to use conspiring, but they've used this collusion in aggrandizing and moving an agenda. So all of these apparatuses from the executive, the judiciary, and even Congress. Now, Congress is supposed to be representing us, the people, but they're not. They're representing those who are paying for them to vote on the things and just doing. And most of these people are, you know, they're being played. They don't realize. I shouldn't say most. There's a percentage of them that are being played. Many of the others realize that, yeah, I'm involved in a racket, and I know this isn't good, but I'm making millions. And, you know, like my representative, you know, is out there. She's making millions. Mm-hmm. And I'm going, oh, my gosh. And now she's actually looking to step down so she can probably take all of her millions and move to a country where she thinks she'll be safe. And I know a lot of people that are in that boat.
That's really not funny.
It isn't.
Let me tell you what bothers me. And these people, I've seen it happen. One, I've seen people I thought were good men go to Congress and something and come back as something else. And two, I've seen them come back rich. Now, I've got a problem with this, because you know and I know that when Thomas Jefferson left the presidency, he wasn't rich. In fact, he had to obtain a loan.
But him and John Adams, after the War of 1812, were in a position where they could sell their libraries to Congress and be able to rebuild the Congressional Library, both him and Adams. That basically buoyed them both, because they were both very poor.
Sure. And so now you have presidents and people in Congress who leave rich.
Right.
I mean, and some of them don't even leave rich. They're just rich.
Right. Now, okay. But when we talking about the judiciary, though, the judiciary has created so many different laws, and many of them insidious, from abortion, which they fixed that. No, they didn't. But marriage, apportionment, and they've gone into so many different things that the court system is deliberately involved in undermining our Constitution. I mean, they're directly been attacking it.
Well, so imagine, tell me if I'm wrong about this, but when, attorneys go to school and they learn case law, which is the basis of this, what is this thing called? The
precedents?
It's precedents, but it's the annotated Constitution.
Correct.
It's where they insert
case law.
What the Supreme Court has said that the Constitution is. And that's what they use.
Right. And
most Americans don't even know what that is.
That is correct. And as a matter of fact, I've even heard patriots calling for, you know, hey, is there some other annotated Constitution so I can learn about the they're being fed a bunch of bad information. It's the indoctrination of our court system, which is why, It's no wonder. It is no wonder why, you know, every time our rights are being stepped on, people head straight to court. And every time you head to court, you're surrendering your sovereignty to a court that actually has no jurisdiction over these things. So the courts themselves have grandized their jurisdiction, and they've actually created all sorts of laws that are directly attacking us. Now, the least of the evils out of the constitutional tyranny we're living under, the least of the evils is the presidential executive orders. Now, there's a total of like 1,600 almost executive orders. And many of them are kind of creating laws, like Biden had gone down and basically ipso facto created this demand of moving us to a digital currency. And they've done other things like that in the past. I mean, Obama was one. FDR was another one. All of these guys have used executive privilege in using executive, unconstitutionally using executive orders to create law when executive orders cannot create a law.
Oh, even Trump scribbled his name on a piece of paper. Here's what he did. He thought he had the authority to ban bump stocks with his signature.
Yes. And he didn't have that authority.
Right.
And so, but he buys into it.
Right. Oh, he also didn't have the authority to create a new branch of the military either.
That is correct. That is correct. But other presidents have done that as well.
Oops.
So the point is that we've been operating where government is no longer confined by those roles, those enumerated roles, responsibilities, powers, and property. And because they can get away with taxing us for all this unconstitutional spending, this is why when we actually look at the Article 5 Convention and this amendment of a balanced budget, folks, that actually allows them to spend a certain percentage of money instead of tying what they spend to enumerated powers. Mm-hmm. Which is better? Which is more constraining? The enumerated powers. They can continue to spend money on social programs and everything else. If we amend the Constitution, that balanced budget amendment will absolutely send us sideways and off the cliff.
Right.
So this is why when I look at what these options are, and actually I actually did a presentation on all these different amendments that are out there. You can find them on Wikipedia, the latest amendments that have been considered, and most of them are just asinine. Mm-hmm. I mean, you really have to, and I guess if there's people that hear it and they go, I think that might be good, but they don't place context to it. What you're doing is you're giving the federal government this power, and they should not have that power.
They don't have that power.
But if we give them an amendment to do that, then it's done.
Yes.
Right.
I see what you're saying.
So there's, I've come up with seven paths. Now, you let me know if there's not, if the paths that I'm covering are, you know, I'm missing something. Now, the status quo is the first path, and that's what we're doing every year. And this is basically aggrandizing and maintaining party privilege, because the party privilege, the Democrat or the Uniparty, the Democrat and Republican Party, has blind faith and trust by a majority of the voters because they constantly vote down party lines. So you can't tell me that they're not enjoying this privilege. And as a matter of fact, they don't hold their public servants accountable, nor do they, you know, have any plan of enforcing full compliance. The only party that I know of that is demanding compliance, that is supporting Republic Review, which is interposition, what we talk about as interposition, that is the process. And so the only party that is doing that is the Wyoming Republican Party. There's no other state that has stepped up and said, we demand full compliance. So we're going into a break real quick. So when we come back, I'll kind of close on the status quo, and then we'll get into the other potential ways of fighting government intrusions and violations of the Constitution. Out of the seven, you tell me what is, you know, is there any other way other than interposition? We'll be right back, folks, after this promo. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. Friends, if you have any questions or comments, we have our 24-hour comment line at 425-270-5416. Okay, so now, Paul, so I'm kind of going through the two standard ways that are, you know, kind of represent the status quo. The first status quo is using our elections, which the party has a monopoly on.
Right.
And as you and I have talked about it, the party is controlling our states as well. It's not sure. just controlling the elections, but is literally controlling our political system in every state.
Sure. And so what, even though you don't have the party structure in the United States Constitution, it's baked in to state code.
Yes. And as a matter of fact, okay. it's baked into federal code as well.
Really? It's not baked in the Constitution?
In code. It's not baked in the Constitution.
Right.
But they've used statutes to convert the Electoral College so that the parties control it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just to be clear, you know, the parties are have been and they co-opted the full control of our system. Uh-huh. And so the other mechanism, which is the standard, you know, mode of operation. Oh, well, you know, we're going to use the ballot box and we're going to use the bench or the court. And so the problem is we've used the court for things that they have no jurisdiction over. Had the court actually lived by this righteous principle that we only have jurisdiction over things arising under this Constitution, which is what the Constitution says, then the federal courts would never have heard cases like the Scopes trial. You know, the monkey trial or, you know, Brown v. Board of Education, Roe v. Wade, all of these different cases that have literally shaped and pushed our political system and our laws down this perverse path. Healthcare, all of these things. I mean, everybody out there that is being directly affected because of healthcare, because of the Department of Transportation, because of agriculture, housing, it doesn't matter. The federal government has no constitutional authority to be involved in these things. And so the fact stands that the court system, based on its limited jurisdiction, has aggrandized itself, and now it has become this rich money market system. It is a money mill because all politicians and everybody, well, we got to go to court. And so I see resistance like to the CO2 pipeline. There's organizations that are preparing a legal battle to go into court. They don't even have jurisdiction over a CO2 pipeline. Not even the state has jurisdiction over the CO2 pipeline. Do you understand that? The state of Iowa does not have jurisdiction to hear a case on an issue of basically stealing property and even having this case. The bottom line is...
Hang on a minute.
Go ahead.
Wait a minute. Let me make sure. If property is being stolen, doesn't the state have jurisdiction to protect this property and the people's rights? I don't understand. When you say the state doesn't have jurisdiction, I need help understanding that.
It's not within the Constitution for them to be able to be involved in regulating and saying we're going to allow this to happen. Other than, even though you have a constitutional violation of basically taking land from somebody, land confiscation, the fact that they're even involved in saying we're going to allow confiscation is overreach. This,
in other words, they shouldn't be allowing it.
They shouldn't be involved in it at all. So here's the question. When you have a legal problem where your state or federal government is getting involved in something that they have no authority to be involved in, no jurisdiction, no power, then, and you fight them and you go into their court, what are you doing?
Oh, you are surrendering your sovereignty to this court.
You've given them right? the advantage. Absolutely.
And so, and I guess that's why you got this term money mill.
Because
courts are money inhalers. Okay, and they suck the financial resources out of anyone who touches them, which makes it hard to make your case.
Yeah, so
effectively.
So tell me a court that has actually stepped up and said, you know, I think maybe we went too far with this case because these people have been destroyed. We've destroyed these good people. This good business has been destroyed because they've been dragged through court for so long. We've depleted their money and have destroyed them.
Has that ever happened?
No, the courts have never taken a moral position. It's just the system and how it works. We're to grind you to a nub, and that's how it works. And I'm telling you that that's not how it works, because what is our legal system? What is the legal system of every state?
It should be common law.
There you go. Common law, which means that when the state is doing something, you go into a county common law court and they declare, yeah, the state has no authority in doing this. And then they start subpoenaing all of these people from the state. Because the power of a common law grand jury actually has that authority to start subpoenaing the governor and legislators and everybody else. And next thing you know, they're coming out with indictments.
So there is a huge ignorance of this.
Yeah, I know.
You know, in fact, because we're not doing it enough, the drill assemblies believe that this is their thing. Okay, you can't call a common law grand jury unless we assemble and do this. But that's not necessarily the case, is it?
No. So a common law grand jury can only be formed by what kind of government do we have? Do we have a democracy like the Jural Assembly asserts?
No.
No. In other words, the individual rights against government are protected by our representatives, not by we the people. In other words, we're not a democracy. And in the monarchical government, we were a democracy under that monarchy. This is why the Bill of Rights was so important. And this is why the Jural Assembly has bought into the monarchical form of government in our antiquated documents that actually included that stuff until the Constitution. And the problem is that nobody scrubbed those bad documents to say that doesn't happen here anymore. We are a Republican form of government. The people do not need to have that power because our power is in our representation. That's what we chose. And so we've got all of these different flavors that everybody wants to introduce. And it's just, one, they confuse everything. And they're not standing on solid ground. They're standing on principles and premises that is a government that has become extinct here.
So because we, with our representatives, have the ability to create common law grand juries. Let me tell you, there's so much ignorance about this that we probably need an entire show on how to do that.
Yeah, and you know, if I was going to do that, I'd probably pull in John Durash or, mm-hmm. you know, somebody from the National Liberty Alliance. And there's, there's some other organizations out there. As a matter of fact, as I understand it, because I'm working with a New York group, and there's even though NLA is in New York, there's another group that is using common law and some of these principles. So I'd love to get involved with them, because I know that there's Paul Nally, who's not a part of the NLA, down in Georgia, that is preaching common law grand juries and so forth. So, you know, as people start learning about this, you know, all we have to do is restore our county. So, but that takes us back to tomorrow's conversation.
Okay.
But I'm just pointing out that we have two paths we've just covered. The mm-hmm. the party system and the status quo, that's not right. working. The only way we're going to take our elections back is we have to get involved, we the people, and we actually have to basically stand up against the parties and against the court system and demand compliance by everybody that is in office. And the only way to do that is through interposition. But again, it seems like I'm selling that. But let's get into the other two that are, you know, that follow this, that most people talk about, which is the Article 5 convention and nullification. Now, I think we've clearly put out this whole, you know, point of the Article 5 convention mm-hmm. is, you know, is not, I mean, there's no need for it. I already said I would support this if the Constitution really was the problem, but it is not the problem. They can't prove it's the problem. They're actually asking people, they're asking your legislatures in your state, folks, to give them a blank check. Let us convene this constitutional convention so that we can consider what we will do. Maybe we'll rewrite the Constitution and we'll make it better, we promise. Who are these right. people? Who are they?
Who are they?
That's right. And see, so I'm going to actually say things, and I'm going to actually ask questions that they don't even the anti-conventionites don't even talk about.
Yeah, and by the way, these aren't Jeffersons and Madisons.
No, they're not. They're not at all. And as a matter of fact, I stated earlier, where is the jurisdiction limitation of the federal government?
It's not.
No. In the Constitution, it is clearly delineated that the jurisdiction is limited to all things arising under this Constitution. So in other words, if it's not enumerated in the Constitution, they can't be involved in it.
Well, here's the problem. The Article 5 Convention is enumerated in the Constitution.
What does that mean?
It means that that they have jurisdiction, that the federal government has jurisdiction over it. If you open that door and let them in, you don't know what you're going to get on the other side.
That is correct. And that's the whole point. That's the whole point. At this point in time, you know, out of one side of their mouth, the conventionites are saying, hey, we got, you know, this opportunity of having a convention, and we're going to control it, because, and we need to do this because the federal government is overreaching and all these different things. But apparently, they have this, maybe it's an ecclesiastical whiteout in their head that they don't think that the federal government will overreach into this very same mechanism that's in the Constitution.
Sure.
I mean, they're overreaching on all these other things. What makes them think that they won't do that? Seriously. I mean, how is it that, because nobody brings this up. Why is it that the anti-conventionites aren't saying, hey, technically, because this does arise, and they've perverted the Constitution and all their powers so badly, that how are you going to tell us that they can't regulate this?
No, the anti-conventionites are saying that the original convention was a runaway convention.
That is correct. That's one of the things that they're saying, yes.
That's why I think that's their primary argument against an Article 5 convention.
And it's a very weak argument at that. It's very weak, because the original convention, they were absolutely wrong. It was not a runaway convention. And you know what? I'd be happy to walk in a room and throw all the documentation down to show, here are the commissions that came from the states to their delegates to go to this convention and do what's necessary, to do whatever you think is necessary to save this republic.
Sure,
because they were all given blank checks.
Right. And what they had wasn't working. They knew it wasn't working. And, you know, a paint job wasn't going to fix it.
Right. And so I don't know where the anti-conventionites, I mean, they bought into this concept. I don't know whose brainchild it really was. But, you know, this is kind of like, you know, the old Flat Earth Society, right? Where, you know, well, you know, Aristotle thought that, you know, the whole world, you know, was the center of everything, and thought that, you know, some of these principles were, you know, scientific law until people started challenging them. Mm-hmm. And Sir Isaac Newton started challenging them. And I will say that that's one thing I'm really good at, is I challenge the convention. I challenge what we call the standards.
Okay.
And so when it comes down to this, you know, the fact of the matter is that when we look at the Article 5 Convention, or actually when we look at the Constitutional Convention, there were 7 amendments that were sought and killed because of Rogue Island. Mm-hmm. And so the state said, we got to do something. We got to do something. And they finally stated that we need to have a convention and we need to go in and create a new system. And we need to do this. And they already stated that one of the amendments was to get rid of the unanimity.
Yeah. There was a case where there were flaws in the compact.
Absolutely. So here's my point. When you say that they already had these amendments, and when you look at what they actually did, they fixed all those problems, and they actually kept the Articles of Confederation. Instead of 13 articles, they created 7, but they changed and formed a new government and a more improved government. I mean, this whole assertion that it was a runaway convention sullies our Constitution and actually gives, to me, it gives traction to the evildoers out there that actually want to, you know, get away from our Constitution. It gives them ammo to say, hey, that was a runaway convention, so we think the Constitution is illegitimate. And I'm telling you, no, it is legitimate. And these men did everything that they were granted the power to do. They did not run away. I'd love to know the name, because, you know, I don't know. Maybe it's just one of those things, because I have a personal reason why I stand and defend the Constitution. I personalize this. And so, you know, when somebody's actually attacking the Constitution in that way, they claim to be a supporter of the Constitution, they're neither. They're neither. Mm. And so, anyway. So the conventionites, I mean, it's not only not the, you know, the Constitution is not the problem, but if you open up that can of worms, the federal government will regulate it. We just covered every reason why single state nullification is wrong.
Mm-hmm.
We just covered that. Do we need go through this again, folks?
Oh, no. James Madison put the last nails in that coffin.
Right. Okay. So now we've got 4. We've identified 4 paths. We've got the status quo with the republic or the party system, or the status quo with the court system, or we could go down this path of a convention, or as the anti-conventionites are subscribing, well, and the 10th Amendment Center, there's other organizations say we need to single state nullify. That's what we need to do. And I'm here to tell you all 4 of those paths are doomed. They will not fix the problem. As a matter of fact, the convention will actually open up a worse problem. And the courts have actually proven that they can't be trusted because they've added on. They're a part of the tyranny. Mm-hmm. And the Republican Party allowing their brand, or I should say these parties, allowing their brand to get away from them so that they can do whatever they do and not hold them accountable. Mm-hmm. That right there is just dubious. I mean, the duplicitness in how they behave is just, folks, why are we allowing this to happen? Wake up.
Right.
Okay, so we've got another group out there and I've brought them up already, but the sovereign citizen movement is another path. But it's not a path of engaging and getting the federal government into control. It's a complete abandonment of our responsibility as citizens in holding our government accountable. Do we have a responsibility to hold our government accountable?
Of course we do.
That's right, because all citizens can be called and compelled to do one thing, to defend the Constitution against enemies foreign and domestic. And we're not doing that.
Right.
So these sovereign citizens who claim to be, we're the epitome of a sovereign. No, you've actually become a selfish, self-serving person because you're only doing it to not pay taxes.
I don't know if that's it. So I was
okay.
I'm somewhat familiar with it just because I was involved with it several years ago. And my experience, people who are in the sovereign citizen movement have been badly stepped on in one way or another by government. And I mean badly. And so there are, but the problem is there's several flavors, you know. There are some who claim that the 14th Amendment made us slaves, and so you don't want to be a United States citizen. There are others who claim differently, but here's what they have in common. They believe that you have a few people called an assembly who get together in their counties, and they go through a process, you know, kind of a documentation process in which they notify the public, they notify, you know, make personal documentation, and then they claim to be assembled. But they're not representing the people. They're only representing themselves.
Right.
The other question that I have not been able to pin them down to get them to answer is, okay, you have an assembly and you have pronouncements, so who is going to enforce what you require to happen? GR, the answers that I get are nearly conspiratorial. It's the military. What military? Okay, you go beyond that. I'm not sure I want to say them, and I don't want to get them wrong. But here's the challenge: you got flavors of these people. You need to pay them money. You got other flavors who aren't wanting money, but they want a solution, okay?
Right.
And so when we get down to what the real issue is, it unites people on the Constitution. The sovereign citizen movement is one fractured, okay?
Right.
They're pointing fingers at each other. There's a group here in Missouri who says, oh, no, don't follow Anna Von Wright's, all right? She's bad news, okay? But frankly, no one, and I'm telling you, not a one of them has been able to answer for me satisfactorily, okay, you make a decision, all right, how do you enforce it? Who are you representing? You know, if there are 23 of you in this county, how does it matter what you do for the other 14,000 people in my county?
A county of 20,000 people.
Sure.
You 34 people are now speaking for 20,000 when there was no election to elect them.
And these people don't even know who they are. Okay, so I don't have answers to these questions. So that's my experience. But you know, there is to some degree some kind of financial incentive, I think.
Right.
Because historically, the United States became a corporation in the 1870s, and they began monetizing the people. And because they monetized the people, here's what some of them say. Said, because you've been monetized, you've got an account somewhere with a bunch of money in it.
Well, so actually, all of these arguments, we just need to dispel them now. The federal government has never had, and the people that did all of these things, never had the authority to do them. So what they've created is this facade. They may have created these legitimate accounts, And they may have created, you know, this tie to this, but they have no authority to enforce any of it. All they have to do is convince us that they do, and that's how they get away with murder.
Right.
And so when we actually take a stand and say, we never gave you that power. Mm-hmm. That power has never been delegated to you to do this, 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 and we can go on. But that's the whole point, which leads us to the next step. Because the sovereign citizen movement buys into, you know, that the Constitution is the problem, and they buy into the fact that, you know, the federal government and the Constitution are in the league, and it's all, this is a legitimate thing, and this is the only way we can save ourselves is by abandoning ship.
Oh, by the way, the other thing they do is they take themselves out of the effort in working with us. I've seen it happen. They extract themselves from the effort that the rest of us are doing to enforce the Constitution.
Right. And they're not capable. They can't sign petitions. They have no rights, which is why, you know, I'm of the opinion, and I see them as parasites.
Well, I wouldn't say they have. There are some who claim that there are some who claim that you need to get rid of your U.S. citizenship. Many of them, especially here, refuse, say they can't do that. You can't do that. We're not going to do that.
So that's why the U.S. citizenship was necessary under the Constitution was if you travel abroad, the federal government has jurisdiction over you. Mm-hmm. These are commonalities of governing, that the federal government has very specific jurisdiction over matters, and they can hold you accountable for treason.
Well, not only that, it's not just jurisdiction, it's protection.
Yes, absolutely. Correct. Yes, to protect us from foreign entities. Laws, you know, committed against committing crimes against the laws of nations and or, you know, committing crimes on the high seas. So the problem is that what this movement does, and I want to move on because I got a minute left. What this movement does is this movement actually takes good people and turns them into Tories. In other words, they're people that no longer support the Constitution. And as far as I'm concerned, they want to go down that path. And I think we should deport them, just like the Tories, just like communists. Anybody that does not want to support the Constitution, we just start deporting. Interposition is the only way. This is where we use petitions. This is where we use the Constitution. We audit the system and so forth. Folks, the only other option, the seventh option, is not tenable. It's the revolution. We cannot fight an armed revolution. No longer are the days where your guns are the same as government guns. The technology and what they're capable of bringing to a battlefield is... Only God knew. Only God knew what we would need, and he gave us everything to take our country back by using the Constitution as our weapon, because I'm telling you, guns won't do it, and the most powerful weapon we have is the pen and the petition. Any parting comments?
No, I think that we've pretty much covered it all. I think that the important thing we have to remember is we've got any variety of issues that many of us are chasing. But we can all unite on the Constitution and bring our issues with us.
That's right. Folks, with that, thank you, Paul, for that closing note. With that, I hope you start understanding that what we're doing is really creating an academic argument that this is the path. This is what we have to do. And with that, we'll be back tomorrow talking about counties and how to do it. I'm J.R. Mobley, Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
The reason progressives are effective in instituting their policies is because they are united ideologically, financially, and socially. In addition, almost every billionaire in the world is funding a vast array of different groups, and these groups' efforts are to undermine our republic and our Constitution. If you don't believe me, just Google Donors to the Open Society Foundations. The only way we're going to successfully combat these efforts and take back our liberties, like our education system, healthcare, state lands, housing, labor, and many other roles, responsibilities, responsibilities and powers that belong to the states is by you and I and local businesses getting involved in supporting political programs and efforts based on constitutional principles. The best way to do this is supporting result-oriented organizations designed to take back our lost liberties. The ultimate result-oriented effort is Republic Review, so please consider contributing to the show and the organizations and activities that we are supporting by going to ReclaimingTheRepublic.org and go to the contributions page, and you can become a listed supporter of liberty.